I'll call House Transportation Committee to order. And could we have a roll call, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Durham.
Here.
Representative Dooling.
Here.
Representative Sprunger.
Excused.
Representative Barker.
Here.
Representative Worth.
Here.
Representative Brockman.
Here.
Representative Butcher.
Here.
Representative Kearns.
Excused.
Representative T. Smith.
Present.
Vice Chair Fern.
Here. Here.
Representative F. Smith.
Excused.
Representative Lynch.
Here.
Representative Carter.
Here.
Representative Baum.
Here.
And Chair Logie.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have a quorum, so we can do business. All those that are planning on participating on any bill, we would ask you to sign the list out front. Turn your cell phones off and know that when you speak, come up to the podium and give your name, where you're from, and then spell your last name, please, and know that your testimony will be recorded. I am going to have to leave. I have a committee that I have to go to and give a bill, and I'm turning over the chairmanship to Vice Chair Durham, who is chairman now, and when you want to speak, address him as Chairman Durham, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will now hear Senate Bill 111, Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Chair, ex-seatmate Durham, and committee. Today, Senate District 2, Carl Glimm, G-L-I-M-M. Today, it is my honor to bring before you a bill to establish the Jacob Allmendinger Memorial Highway in Gallatin County. In 2019, Deputy Allmendinger was called on to assist a stranded motorist up near Ferry Lake and was killed in the line of duty. And he's got a great story. I will actually just sit down and let the members, the proponents bring that story to you and share with that, and I will close.
Thank you, Senator. Are the proponents for Senate Bill 111? Supporters for Senate Bill 111?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ron Allmendinger, A-L-L-M-E-N-D-I-N-G-E-R. I'm from Belgrade, Montana, and Jake was my son, and he paid the ultimate sacrifice for someone he never met or never knew. And we're just asking that you support this bill to keep his memory alive. And I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allmendinger. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 111?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, and committee members, my name is Monica Allmendinger, A-L-L-M-E-N-D-I-N-G-E-R, from Belgrade, Montana. I am the surviving spouse of Deputy Jacob Allmendinger. Jake was a huge part of the community. He served on search and rescue. He worked in dispatch before becoming a deputy. Being a deputy was a dream come true for Jake. Ever since he was little, he always wanted to serve and protect and make a difference. This memorial sign would be like a physical legacy for him and an honor to myself, my children, our families, and the community. It would just be a reminder of Jake's service and sacrifice that he made to the community. Thank you so much for hearing me out, and it means so much to myself and my children. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Almendinger. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 111?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I represent the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. We are here in wholehearted support of Senate Bill 111. We thank the sponsor for bringing the bill forward. We thank the family for their willingness to come and share one of the most traumatic things that has ever happened in their life. And we ask you to please consider passing this bill. We know in the state of Montana, when law enforcement signs on for their shift every day, they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know. There's no guarantee that they're going to come home safe to their family. And we know that when they don't, the state of Montana can never make those families whole. There's no way that any policy in this building will make those families whole. But we can do some things, a small token of appreciation to help families and community members remember officers who've fallen in the line of duty. So for those reasons, we would just ask you to please look favorably on this bill and move it out of your committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilbertson, and thank you for your continued support for our peace officers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brian Gutkin, G-O-O-T-K-I-N. I am here as the retired sheriff of Gallatin County. We lost Jake on my watch, and I am here in support of the Almendinger family and respectfully ask for a due pass.
Thank you, Mr. Gutkin. Are there further proponents for Senate Bill 111?
Mr. Chair, member of the committees, my name is Dan Smith, S-M-I-T-H. I'm the executive director for the Montana Police Protective Association. I'm also a board member of the Montana Law Enforcement Museum. Too often, the only people that remember are the law enforcement officers and their families. After somebody's sacrifice has passed some time, we forget how important that sacrifice is. By doing this memorial roadway, we remember and we show the public that law enforcement is out there and has been for a very long time, and we should honor their sacrifice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Again, Nanette Gilbertson. I was asked to stand in support of this bill on behalf of Jesse Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, and the Association of Montana Troopers. And pardon my breach of decorum. I'm not remembering that when I was up here before. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilbertson. Are there further supporters, proponents of Senate Bill 111? Ms. Bermalad, are there proponents online?
We have two online today, Mr. Chair. First up, we have Michelle Almendinger.
Ms. Michelle Almendinger, if you could identify yourself, spell your last name, and let us know where you're from before you begin.
Michelle, I don't think your microphone is working.
Ms. Bermal, can you get us the other online proponent and see if you can give Michelle a call and get the details figured out?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sheriff Springer, are you available?
Sorry, it doesn't appear that his microphone is working either, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Bermal. If you could work out those details, and we'll find opportunity for them to call back in. Are there informational witnesses for Senate Bill 111? Seeing none, are there opponents for Senate Bill 111? Seeing none, while we're waiting for Mrs. Almendinger and Sheriff Springer, are there questions from the committee? Representative Carter.
For the bill sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, this came over from the Senate. What was the vote out of the Senate?
I believe the vote was unanimous out of committee, one opposed on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a question for Mrs. Monica Almendinger.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being here, Ms. Almendinger. Most of us, none of us probably have met your late husband. Could you share with us a story?
Oh, boy. like a work story or a personal story, Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Depends if you want us to laugh or cry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so terrible at speaking. I'm super nervous. I don't know. Jake was somebody that anybody who met him, like, he was just had a contagious smile and laugh. I don't know anybody who didn't like Jake. Yeah, he was the best husband, father. He was definitely like a little kid. I remember we got my middle child a trampoline for her birthday, and I think Jake was more excited about that than she was. But he just had such a great personality and definitely loved to serve. Not only myself and our families, but the community as well. Yeah, I guess another funny story with him working, I guess. We were outside playing with a lot of our neighbors, and he was getting ready to leave for work. We had our trash can sitting at the end of the road. Like, literally our whole street was outside just playing, and Jake decided to turn his sirens and lights on for all the kids. So he drew all this attention over, and he ended up backing out, hitting the trash can. Dump the trash everywhere. So that was definitely a funny memory of that. Just because we're not people that like to draw a lot of attention to ourselves. So it was pretty funny. He was pretty embarrassed.
Thank you so much for helping us
get to know
a little bit about him. Ms. Bramall, any success?
It appears to be on their end, but we can try it again if you would like, Mr. Chair.
If you would, please. Ms. Almendinger, can you hear us? I guess let the record reflect that Ms. Michelle Almendinger is a proponent supporter for Senate Bill 111. Is the sheriff available?
Okay, can you hear me okay now, Mr. Chair?
We can. Thank you for being here, Sheriff. If you could let us know where you reside and something about Deputy Almendinger.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Durman. So I am Dan Springer. I'm the Sheriff of Gallatin County. Last name is Springer. And I obviously worked here as the undersheriff for former retired Sheriff Gookin. during Jake Allmendinger's death. I have known Monica's family much better since that time, sadly, as well as Ron and Michelle. But one of the things, and I appreciate Dan Smith's comments, because that's kind of my concerns, is it's very easy for us to never forget Jake, as well as for family members to not forget him. But it's about the community always remembering him, and the concept here behind the, you know, naming a portion of a roadway after him is about allowing the community to always remember him as well. So that's kind of the concept behind it, and I really appreciate you guys taking this bill on. I will just say Jake was one of those gentle giants, very tall, big man, but really goofy, worked extremely hard, had a couple of different businesses on the side, had this job and then a landscaping business, but his primary focus was taking care of his family. And he was able to do that. And so now it's our turn to do that for them as well. I do thank you for your time, and thanks to Senator for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Sheriff Springer. Are there further questions from the committee? Representative Brockman.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question, and I'm not sure who this would go to, but what is the process for naming a highway after a member of our law enforcement? Just could somebody take us through the steps as to how this bill got before us today?
Thank you, Representative. Will the bill sponsor rise to that occasion?
Yes, Chairman Durham, Representative Brockman. So these bills, it's just like a regular bill. So you bring it just like you regularly do. I have had the privilege of serving in the Senate Transportation Committee for the last two sessions now. And it's kind of been the committee's, it's kind of like an unwritten rule. We typically like to do these memorial highways for law enforcement or military personnel who have fallen in the line of duty. And I think that that's a very small token of what we can do for them. But kind of to reserve it to that level of sacrifice, I feel. And it kind of has been a tradition a little bit. It's not in statute that's the only people that can be have highways named after them, but I think it's a good tradition for us to hold, because it's quite an honor, and I think it's a very small token that we can give to those families and to the public. The sheriff's point is well presented, that we need to remind the public that these people are, every time they go out, they're laying their life on the line.
Thank you, Senator Glimm. Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator, will you close on your bill, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair Durham and members of the committee. I appreciate the questions, and I appreciate everyone's time. It is unfortunate that Michelle wasn't able to speak about her son, but she will come for the bill signing. If you wonder why somebody from Northwest Montana is carrying the bill, it's because Michelle is my cousin. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. This will close the hearing for Senate Bill 111. Committee, without objection, we're going to take executive action on this bill before I hand over the helm. Seeing none,
Mr. Chairman, move do pass on SB 111.
Thank you, Vice Chair Fern. I copy do concur, Senate Bill 111. Ms. McCauley, could you give us a voice vote?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Durham.
Yes.
Representative Dooling.
Yes.
Representative Sprunger.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Barker.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Worth.
Yes.
Representative Brockman.
Yes.
Representative Butcher.
Yes.
Representative Kearns.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative T. Smith.
100% yes.
Vice Chair Fern.
Yes.
Representative F. Smith.
Yes.
Representative Lynch.
Yes.
Representative Carter.
Aye.
Representative Baum. And Chair Logie.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have 15 votes for yes.
Thank you. That would be unanimous. Senate Bill 111 has been concurred in transportation. We'll now move on to second reading on the House floor.
Moving forward, and now that we've made our little switch, we have Senate Bill number 57 from Senator Manzella.
Thank you, Chairman Logie and members of House Transportation. It's good to be before you today. I am Senator Teresa Manzella, representing Senate District 44, and for the record, my last name is spelled M-A-N-Z-E-L-L-A. And I bring before you today Senate Bill 57, the short title of which is An Act Generally Revising Department of Transportation Contracting, Providing for Alternative Project Delivery Methods. And before I lose you in the details, I'll share with you that it has a $0 fiscal note, and it has come through both committee and the Senate unanimously. So it's a pretty simple bill that allows the department to have more tools in their toolbox. The department is working hard for the citizens of Montana on road construction and building and highway maintenance, and this is just another tool in their toolbox to allow them to do a better job. So what the bill does is it authorizes the Montana Transportation Commission to award projects using all alternative project delivery methods, which are approved by the Federal Highway Administration upon recommendation of the department. It consolidates the commission's contracting authority under Title 60, Chapter 2, Part 1, MCA. The term alternative project delivery methods applies only to MDT and the commission. Let's see. Similarly, Title 18, Chapter 2, Part 1 authorizes state agencies other than MDT and the Commission to enter specific types of alternative project delivery contracts. Montana Department of Transportation would utilize their current project delivery selection process to select the most appropriate project delivery methods based on the needs of the individual project. The PDSP is based on six key elements of infrastructure projects: cost, impacts, scheduled impacts, opportunity to manage risk, complexity of the design and the construction phasing, opportunity for innovation, and the complexity of the coordination. So as you can see, there's a lot of thought that does go into the discussions and the negotiations. And with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I will sit and let the proponents tell you more in detail about the bill.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Do we have proponents?
Chairman,
Chairman Logie, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity today to speak in support of this bill. For the record, my name is Dustin Rouse, spelled R-O-U-S-E. I live in Clancy, Montana, and I'm the Highways and Engineering Administrator for MDT. Chairman, if it's acceptable, I have a handout for the committee.
Go ahead.
I also wanted to thank Senator Manzella for sponsoring this bill and gaining a bipartisan support on the Senate side. It was unanimous through committee and on the Senate floor, and very much appreciate working with the Senator to get it through the Senate side. The state of the transportation industry is trending towards alternative contracting methods that are better able to address specific needs of individual projects, such as expedited project delivery, cost reduction through innovation, contractor involvement in the design process, and risk reductions. These contracting methods facilitate the coordination between MDT, the contractor, and our consultants. The result is less impact to the traveling public and improved designs and cost savings throughout the life of our projects. Senate Bill 57 would allow MDT to utilize a construction manager, general contractor, or what we call CMGC, and progressive design and build, what we call PDB, contracting methods with the Transportation Commission's approval. MDT currently has authority to utilize design bid build and design build as contracting methods. In the handout that I think you all have in front of you now, if you open that flyer up from left to right, the two contracting methods that we currently are authorized to utilize are the two on the left, design bid build and design build. In the design bid build process, that's the typical contracting process where we'll put together the PS&E, the project, the schedule of items, and an estimate, and so we're doing all the field investigation, we're speccing everything that we can think of, and then we put it out and look for low bid from a contractor, and so through that process, again, it's open to low bid. It does tend to it puts the risk on the owner, puts the risk on the department, because it falls on us to make sure that we spec everything out, and it also tends to put you at somewhat loggerheads between the owner and the contractor, holding them to those specifications, and from that type of a position. In design build, and that's the second one, and we do have authority to use design build. Those are for our rapid type projects. They start with we allow a consultant and a contractor to team up together. They get to choose who they team up together with, and they submit for our projects. We typically have about a 30% design, so we have a concept of what we want built. But in the design build, that team, the contractor and the consultant, they're going to take that project then, continue the design process and build it and deliver us a built project. In that situation, in design build, typically the risk falls more on that design build firm because they're assuming all the design risks and the responsibility to deliver that project. And so we tend to see that in their costs. They're trying to estimate every scenario, but because they can't anticipate everything, they tend to include that in their cost as a design build firm. The two methods that I'm here primarily about today is the CMGC and the progressive design build. And in both of those contracting methods, they allow what we call a more collaborative approach to the design process. In progressive design build, the contractor, again, it's similar to design build in that the contractor and the consulting team up together. They get to choose who they work with, but they come in at the very inception of an idea. We could bring them in at what we call our nomination phase. So we just have an idea of a project. We can bring them in at the very earliest stage, and we together, the owner, the contractor and a consultant work to mitigate risks, to be able to share those risks throughout the project development, which then can keep the costs down as we develop through the life of that project. In the CMGC type of scenario, MDT was authorized in 2017 to do 4 pilot projects of CMGC, and through that process, those are typically for a little larger type project, picture large interchange projects or large reconstruct type projects. They fit fairly well with a CMGC type of a process, and through the CMGC process, again, very focused on risk mitigation and collaborating within that team between the owner, the consultant, and the contractor, and again, for it worked very well for those larger type projects. In closing, passage of this bill would allow the department to take advantage of potential cost savings and reduce traveler impact by having the flexibility to select the appropriate project delivery method and to have those project tools in the toolbox. Different project delivery methods could be selected to address risk, mitigation, rapid project delivery, innovations, or all of the above. These contracting tools are critical in addressing Montana's bridge needs across the state and for delivering discretionary grants if they are awarded. I'll be available for any questions if you have them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rouse. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Jay Skoog. That's S-K-O-O-G. I'm the Executive Director of the American Council of Engineering Companies of Montana. Our organization represents engineering firms throughout the state. Every day, engineering firms across Montana work with elected officials and government agencies on technical matters to provide support to the decision-making process to deliver high-quality design services for public infrastructure projects. Our members support Senate Bill 57. We have been involved with the evolution of MDT's alternative delivery program since the fall of 2001, when then-Director Galt formed the first Design-Build Advisory Council. Myself and Kerry Hagerberg, at the time with the Contractors Association, participated.
We refrained from names.
Oh, sorry.
You can give a title, but
okay.
Names.
All righty. Myself and our organization, the Contractors Association, participated on that advisory council. We supported the initial design-build pilot program at the 2003 legislature, and we supported permanent authority to use design-build at the 2007 session. Since that time, our members have teamed with contractors to deliver many design-build projects for MDT. Likewise, we have supported MDT's ability to use CMGC, which they're asking for permanent authority to do so in this bill. We agree that for complex projects, CMGC or progressive design-build are better able to address unique challenges and at the same time expedite project delivery, reduce costs through innovation, and reduce risks. The bottom line is that our members are comfortable with MDT's use of alternative delivery contracting methods, and we do trust their process. Accordingly, we urge your support of this bill, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jason Riddle, R-I-T-T-A-L, here on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties, and Mr. Darrell James, J-A-M-E-S, also asked me to stand up on behalf of the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. We stand in support of Senate Bill 57 for a couple of simple reasons. Fiscally, it's smart, and for our travelers, it's smart. We can deliver projects for cheaper, better, more efficiently, quicker, by collaboration between the engineers, the state, and the contractors. So we should give that opportunity when it makes sense, because our projects across the state aren't always the same. They're not cookie cutter. When these projects make sense, let's let them do it and give them this latitude, this tool in the toolbox. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brian Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Contractors Association. Montana Contractors Association is standing in support of this bill. I'd like to thank the sponsor and the department for working with us through conversations on the way this bill has been drafted and put forward. We think that this is a really important thing to get projects done, to take advantage of some federal money that's out there, and to come up with some innovative solutions to getting our highway projects done throughout the state of Montana. We'd ask that you pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Russ Katherman, K-A-T-H-E-R-M-A-N. With the Department of Administration, Architecture and Engineering Division, our office is responsible for vertical infrastructure. This methodology that the department is asking for has been in statute since 2005, and we're just here as their colleague to let you know that it works well, and in support of their efforts in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thanks. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Dwayne Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I also reside in Clancy, south of Helena here, about 10 miles. We also rise in support of this bill. Good roads and bridges are crucial for the trucking industry and for delivering goods. In any way that we can expedite project development and a completed project, we're all for. A couple things I think could be considered with this bill that I'd like to just mention. One is we have like over 400 wood bridges in the state, and the federal government has asked the department to reanalyze those bridges, which has resulted in a lot of bridge postings that kind of hurt the industry. If there's a way to help bundle some of those projects, that this innovation could be used to deliver those bridges, to build those bridges quicker, we're all for that. The other thing, a lot of our members are contractors in the state because they have a lot of trucks, and any type training or things that the department could do to help the in-state contractors be ready for these type projects, we're also in support of. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? I see Lauren Fraser online. Proceed, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman Logie. This is Lauren Fraser, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R. I reside in Great Falls. I'm the current Transportation Commissioner for District 3 in Great Falls, and I would ask for your support and a due pass on this bill. Please give us at the Transportation Commission the flexibility to put the right contract together for the right project, and for a lot of the benefits that the other proponents have mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fraser. There are no more online. Do we have any more proponents came in? Do we have any opponents? Do we have any opponents? I don't see any online here. So informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Ferd.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Mr. Rouse.
Chairman Logie, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rouse, can you give us a ballpark figure on your observations of savings, maybe percentage-wise, using the design build and what you anticipate if we should approve the progressive design and the CMGC methods?
Chairman Logie, Representative Fern, I can give a fairly good estimation on the CMGC because we, as I stated, we've had the four pilot projects for the CMGC process, and through those four projects, we estimate about a $9.2 million savings. And when you look at that from a overall compared to the overall construction costs of those projects, it resulted in about a 10% savings. The CMGC process itself, again, is collaborative, and so as you're working through the design of the projects, you encounter things that were unexpected. But again, part of that whole process is being able to work together to find solutions together. Sometimes leveraging some of the information and the equipment that a contractor has that we would not be aware of otherwise. And so through that collaboration, we've seen about a 10% savings overall on looking at construction dollars.
Paula?
Go ahead.
Mr. Rouse, if this bill goes through, can you give us just a rough idea of how many projects you might do or contract out in a year that uses the CMGC method?
Chairman Logie, Representative, to give you a good idea of what we would be looking at, we currently, through our typical process, our design bid build, which is like that's our bread and butter contracting method, that accounts for around 90% of our contracting, and all alternative contracting is in that 8 to 10% range of what we use the alternative contracting for. I anticipate, and we're already seeing it this year, just based on our internal needs from a staff perspective, but also projects that align themselves with alternative contracting. That's starting to tick up. I mean, we're already starting to see it this fiscal year, more alternative contracting use. I suspect with full approval and if we could use the two additional alternative contracting methods, there'd be a handful of projects that would ideally fit into this type of contracting method, and we would definitely be looking at those to utilize those through if we were approved to use these methods.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further question? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For a question for Mr. Rouse, if you could just stay up there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rouse, obviously I'm a contractor from Lakeside. My question to you is, how does this bidding process work? Because usually, you know, the engineers would place their plans out for a bid, that bid would get awarded, then they come to us contractors. How does it work and still stay underneath this $50,000 bid? If you can just briefly explain that, then I'll have a follow-up question after that.
Chairman Logie, Representative, so the way it works is we still have to have a price component in the bidding process, and so let's take a progressive design build type project if we're approved to go down that route, the team the consulting team and the contractor would team up. They submit a proposal, and in that case, the price component is going to be their overhead. So we use that that's just the price piece. But they're also it's an open RFP, and so any teams can compete. So you have we typically would like to see four or five different contractor consultant teams teaming up together and bidding on this RFP. How they get selected is we obviously have a set of rating criteria. We go through that. We're looking for what are their innovations? What's their approach to the project? Are there creative ways of reducing the impact to the public? So there's good, depending on the project, there's going to be different criteria that we weight, and that's how we select the consultant. And then to further answer your question on ultimately, we select one of those firms, and so then we begin that process of developing the project, working together. We're going to get to a point where we're either going to have what's called an early work package, so they go out and start construction work, or ultimately would come to a GMP, a guaranteed maximum price. And at that point, what we do is the contractor independently puts together an estimate based on all the information that they know through the development of that project. We also hire independent of that contractor, what we call an ICE, an independent cost estimator. And that person comes from the construction industry, and they're used to bidding construction projects. And so they provide that independent, they're not MDT, they're not the consultant, they're an independent bidder. and they have to be within 10% of the of that contractor at the point that we open those bids. And then we also do an independent estimate. Our consultant, if it's a consultant or if it's internal, we also do our own estimate as well. So we have three estimates that we compare to make sure that we're not getting taken advantage of, that the traveling public is getting the best bang for their buck.
Thank you. And then just a quick follow-up. So you don't think there's any fear of taking out that checks and balances, because that's, as a contractor, having an engineer that is impartial, that wants to make sure that what I do is exactly what their plans show. I just get a little apprehensive about an engineer joining up with us contractors when we have to do something for a set price, that quality control might dip. That's my only fear of this, but obviously you don't have that same fear.
Correct. Chairman Logie, Representative, The measures we have in place to ensure that is not an issue is we still the entity, whether it's MDT staff that are out doing the inspection during construction, are obviously going to be independent. We still have that oversight. If we hired a consulting firm, that they could not be, obviously they couldn't have a relationship with the consultant that is teamed with the contractor. So even if we brought in a outside consultant to administer the construction process itself, they would have to be independent. Hopefully that answers that.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Rouse. Mr. Rouse, Mr. Chair, from the working class perspective, can we dial it back a little bit further? So MDOT determines there's a road that needs fixed. And then they notify that, hey, this section of road is going to get fixed. And then we look for people to, or contractors to make that happen.
Chairman Logie, Representative. It depends. It depends on the contracting method that we're planning to utilize. If it's the version that's called progressive design build, we would be bringing them in fairly early. We could say we're seeing a lot of rutting. That's you know, where the wheel paths are starting to leave divots in the road, and you get water when it rains. And we have a section of road that we want addressed. In those instances, yes, we could say we'd like to reconstruct this segment of road from milepost 10 to 12, or milepost 10 to 20, and we're asking for a contractor and a design team to put together a proposal on how they would address that. In the case of CMGC, in that type of contracting method, typically we hire a consultant independently. We'll develop plans to about 30%. So we'd already have an alignment and a proposed design. So we'd have the beginnings of a design. We call it 30%, and then we would include that in the RFP and allow the team to bid on that. And so it depends on which contracting method we utilize, but it could be from inception, or it could be that we have about a 30% design and we put it out that way.
Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Any further questions? Yeah, Representative Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Ross. On quality control, you use the federal specs on all them?
Excuse me, can you repeat that?
On the quality control, do you use the federal specs?
Chairman Logie, Representative Smith. Yes, absolutely. And the way this bill is drafted, any of the alternative contracting methods that we would utilize, they would already be ones that are recognized by federal highways as viable alternative contracting methods.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Rouse, on how do you get the public opinion on a publish if it's design and build?
Chairman Logie, Representative, so how the public involvement process works is actually very similar to if it was in-house, and either in-house project where we work with, and a lot of times for our in-house projects, we work with a public involvement firm. We go out to the public and engage the public and get their feedback. The same process would be necessary through this as well. Even though we may bring in a contractor early, that doesn't mean that a no build isn't still an option on that project. And so that team still has to go through that process. That team still has to go through the engagement of the public, getting their input and getting their feedback as we progress through that project.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
And Mr. Chairman, then you would have an outline of the road before you go out?
Sure.
A basic drawing of the road?
Yeah.
Go out to the public?
Chairman Logie, Representative, at the time that we would go out and discuss it with the public, they could approach it a couple of different ways, but typically we would have some type of concept that we could share with the public when we go out for those initial engagements.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Would the sponsor care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for a good hearing, good questions. I wanted to share with Representative Smith and the rest of you. I met with the department on this, and of course it was not something that I was terribly familiar with, but I made a few notes that I wanted to share with you concerning this handout. And this is regarding Representative Smith's questions. On the design bid build, the risk is on Montana Department of Transportation. The design build, the next one over, the risk is on the design build team, and they can really move fast on that one. The next one, the one that we're specifically talking about today, is the progressive design build. The contractors and the designers are brought in at concept, and there's a shared risk, and there's more players to be consolidated and in collaboration. So you have a higher cost due to a higher risk factor, and that makes perfect sense to me. Montana DOT is doing a really good job. They've received a lot of praise from a lot of the members on my committee. And again, I think that this should just be a tool in their toolbox that we should make available to them. Roads and the quality and the safety of our roads, of course, are important, from our school children to our elderly to our commerce, getting our products to market. So I would encourage a due pass on this bill, and I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. And that closes the hearing on Senate Bill 57. We have two presenters in the House yet. The way I put it on the board, we have, I think we'll take our Senate bill next, Senate Bill 108. And we will open the hearing on Senate Bill 108.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Barry Usher, USATR, Senate District 20. I bring Senate Bill 108 to you today. I guess it's, let's start with an example. Have any of you ever been pulled over by a police officer?
Never.
They want to see your license, registration, and insurance card. So that insurance card, well, last time I got pulled over, I was in my wife's car, and I had no clue where hers was. So fortunately, they happened to say, oh, I can check on the computer. So they have the insurance information on their computers in their cars. Those agencies that don't have the laptops, their dispatchers have the capability to get that. The other issue with having the insurance card is, say, for instance, my business, we renew our insurance every April 1st. And if we miss the payment in November, because it's monthly payments, November 1st, you don't have insurance, but you have a card that says you have insurance. What's the sense in requiring to have a card if it probably is not, or not probably is not, could not be, may not be accurate information? So all this bill does is take it away, that you're not required to carry it. Officers have that information in their car, or their dispatchers have it. If for some reason they can't get in their car and their dispatcher's computer's down, we amended it on the floor. So if you do get a ticket and you can prove that you did have insurance on that day, then you can get that ticket taken care of down at the courthouse. So that's all this bill is, and I'm sure it's going to take a little while, so you might want to set a time limit for the amount of proponents and opponents, sir.
I'll take that under advisement. Do we have any proponents? There goes that theory. Do we have any opponents? Do we have any informational witnesses? Questions from the committee, and I know we do have some of those. I can predict a few here. Representative Carter.
For the bill sponsor, please, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative, since I'm the only one that's allowed to answer him, I guess I can.
Mr. Chair and good Senator, what happens in the event of a conflict? What happens if my insurance card is conflicted with what comes up on the computer?
Well, if you're not required, Mr. Chair, Representative, if you're not required to have that card, you're not going to give that card. And the most accurate information should be the electronic information that the officer or dispatch is able to get anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the bill sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Durham.
Thank you for being here, Senator. I think there's some potential for this bill. My concern, if you've seen the insurance card, there's quite a lot of information, including the vehicle and the VIN, the policy number, and the names of the insured. Where would that information be available to the police officer upon request or crash?
Mr. Chair, Representative. So most of that information is either on the registration, on the driver's license, except for maybe, well, the policy number should be in the computer.
Representative Durham, is that sufficient?
Just for clarification, my recollection is it is an insurance company and a policy number. Maybe I can return with a better question.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Worth.
I'm a recovering slob, too, so I know that you cannot have your insurance card with you. But is the onus on the insurance company, or is the onus on you? Obviously, you would pay the fine if you didn't have insurance, but who keeps your computers or the state's computers caught up?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure.
Representative Durham.
For the bill sponsor, Mr. Chair, Senator, would that be through MVD, through the Merlin system currently?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would assume it is wherever you run the driver's license information, which I would assume is Merlin, and in the new system, it should be much more enhanced.
Representative, are you
following? Perhaps on that issue, we could get clarification from MVD, maybe a request.
Ms. Hess?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can find that information out and have it to you before executive action on this bill.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question for the sponsor, but I think all that insurance stuff goes to that Accord system. like with your business liability and all that stuff, there's like one big mega computer somewhere that the DMV dips into at some point.
We'll get that info.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Yes. Way over there. Yes, Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just concur with Vice Chair Durham's. My only concern regarding this is as far as how it is updated. Say your insurance changes because you shop around for insurance, or you get a young person that's now going to be on your insurance and you have to change companies, what the requirement is going to be as far as getting that information forwarded at the point it changes. So that would be my only concern as far as not having it available.
Is that a form of a question for the sponsor?
Verify. Correct, bill sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I mean, I have that concern too, and I know it's done in the background, but that really doesn't pertain to this bill. This bill is, should I have to carry this piece of paper or not? How they do it in the back end is not anything to do with this bill because they're already doing it. And so that's why I didn't dig that far deep into this. So I apologize for not having those answers, but I was trying to do a simple bill.
Thank you. Senator, we will. I think Ms. Hess will get probably those answers. Now they have the new system, too, that is coming out, and that may change things a little. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Gardner.
For the bill sponsor, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, do you know of any other states that do not require insurance card in the vehicle on the person's possession?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carter, I can tell you I was a cop, and it was never required in the two different states I went to a police academy. So I would say there are very few that require it. I can look into that, though.
Not necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Would the sponsor care to close?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, members of this great committee. Out of respect for the next bill sponsor, I will just close by saying I'm surprised all of you aren't proponents of this bill. But with that said, I will ask for a do pass.
Thank you. And that closes the hearing on SB 108. Our next bill is House Bill 470, and we have our representative in our midst who had to wait just a little while. So I'll open the hearing on House Bill 470.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No, that's not right. You haven't been a Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ross Fitzgerald, F-I-T-Z-G-E-R-A-L-D, House District 17, Ponderay Cascade, and then northern chunk of Lewis and Clark County. For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Vice Chair Durham has already got the meat of most of this bill. It's just that there's some nuances that hopefully when we get done with this hearing, you'll be able to just merge those two bills together, because basically we had the same plan but a little different approach. And the only thing after we actually amended this original bill is that we had some, and it's, again, I'll take the blame for the misfire, but some of the terminology and the definitions were different than the original bill we did last session. So we had those corrected on this bill, and I believe Representative Durham already had his fairly solid, except we had added in more of the desires of the Montana Highway Patrol's wishes so that they could actually take evidence of reckless endangerment in terms of speeding through an incident, whether it be an emergency incident or any operation that's being performed on the highway. And as Representative Durham's bill, it includes all utilities and all operations near or on a highway so that they're all protected in all cases, providing they have the required signage and warnings out. The one thing about the bill in page 1, line 23, subsection 1B, is that somehow the blue lights got put in, inserted on highway maintenance vehicles, which is not correct. According to law, only law enforcement has blue lighting. So that will be struck, hopefully, by just possible at the merging of these two bills, just eliminating that particular term. But the highway maintenance vehicle, as you see on line 25, sub 2, this term includes tow trucks, snow plows, rural electric vehicles, telephone cooperative vehicles, in addition to all the emergency responders on a particular incident, being an accident or otherwise. So hopefully this is all inclusive to anything that happens on our highways and byways that protects anybody that's on or above those highway corridors. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Do we have proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Neil Durham from Northwest Montana. I'm a retired Montana State Trooper after 28 years, and it's on those regards that I support this bill. Representative Fitzgerald and I have been working through the interim period, and as the session began, his bill wasn't ready to fly as I was hoping it would be, and the time frames that I needed, and I was also working with the cooperatives to ensure that we protected their utility vehicles and their linemen working on the roadways, and so that's why there's two separate bills on the similar concept. But it's important to me that I support both bills and that we find the right solution to make our highway workers safer.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Oh, excuse me. Following your orders, I'm an opponent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, glad to be before you today. John Iverson, Iverson, representing AAA, the Motor Club. Many states include additional categories of vehicles in slow down, move over. Road maintenance vehicles, 30 states. Municipal vehicles, 22 states. Utility vehicles, 25 states. This is something a lot of people have done. We don't want to just protect one single class. We want to protect those people that are serving the public, taking care of us on those roads. So this is a good bill. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jesse Luther, last name is Luther, appearing today on behalf of the Association of Montana Troopers. And also, Mr. Chairman, before I forget, David Smith with the Montana Contractors Association asked me to do a Me Too in support of this bill on behalf of his organization as well. However, the Association of Montana Troopers rises in strong support of this bill. We appreciate the sponsor bringing it. As he highlighted on page 1 in section 2, subsection 2, under highway maintenance vehicle, it includes everybody in this definition. It also includes law enforcement. And the other part about this bill that we really like is on page 2 in section 4. This has been our concern with some of the other bills dealing with this same move over statute, this session, is that I think inadvertently in 2021, the speeds were removed from the move over statute, leaving a very subjective standard for issuing one of these citations. And if someone chooses to challenge one of these citations, courts were throwing out evidence because it was too subjective. So we appreciate the reference to the speeds in section 4, lines 20 through 28 being reinserted into the bill so there is a more objective standard for law enforcement so that when they're writing a citation, it's able to be enforced by the court system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Dwayne Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I reside in Clancy, south of here, and I'm the executive director for the Montana Trucking Association. We're in support of this bill, and the one thing that hasn't been talked about a lot that I think is very important is the new Section 6. And that, I just want to draw everyone's attention to. I think that's when, you know, it's pretty easy to get complacent on highway safety and when things happen out on the road. But the due diligence of the enforcement and the Department of Transportation to make sure that their folks, when it's a non-emergency, know that maybe there's other options. Maybe if a GVW truck is weighing a truck, or GVW officer is weighing a truck, maybe there's a better spot. So it doesn't have to be an office on the roadway. So I think that's daily, weekly, whatever. I think that's a good thing that the different organizations make sure that they talk with their employees on. The speed, it's maybe just a little bit confusing, you know, with all the different things, and maybe there is a simpler way to come up with the speed versus reducing it so much on the interstate, so much more on the non-interstate. That might be just a little bit confusing and try to get, and I don't want to sound like an opponent for that, but I just wanted to bring that up too, that there may be a simpler way for that. So thank you.
Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Chair Logie, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, representing the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. We are in support of House Bill 470, simply from the standpoint of public safety and worker safety. We think this goes a long way to protecting those who are out on our highways and pulled over doing any number of different kinds of work. So we'd encourage your support. Thank you.
Further proponents? I don't. Okay. Opponents?
Thank you, Chairman Logie, members of the committee. I come in opposition to this bill as written. It's a good idea going forward. I helped write the first move over law.
You want to
GILBERT.
And are you representing
the Monsanto Tow Truck Association?
Proceed. Yeah.
Okay. Our concern with the bill as written is it takes the tow trucks out of the position they're in under current law, which was written quite a while back, not in the last session, it was just updated. And it puts them in with the other emergency vehicles. Well, if you get thrown in with ambulances and law enforcement, you have to have blue lights and a siren. We're not allowed to have those, nor do we want them. And that's why in the current law, it says, it lists, enumerates those law enforcement and emergency vehicles, and then it says, and tow trucks. Because we don't, under that saying, we don't have to follow the red light or the blue lights and the siren. What happens now under the current system, if it's an emergency, a real emergency, someone's trapped in a vehicle, the dispatcher will notify the tow truck company that they call on rotation, and they will say, proceed with lights, but still they have to follow the speed limit, they have to stop at the stop lights, but they can, you know, go directly and go now. That part we can live with. Under this bill, there is concern that we're requiring something that's not only difficult, but it's illegal. We don't want to see that. And that's why I agree with the merging of the two bills, because Representative Durham's bill leaves that language as it was and keeps the tow trucks in the position that we're best suited for, not only when moving, but when parked. And most of our emergency things happen when we're parked. If you recall, 2 years or 4 years ago, two tours were killed in the Columbus area. This year already, two wreckers have been totaled out in a clash on ice up by Drummond. So it's a high-risk area. We need the protection. We need to have the signs out and all that stuff. We want to be part of it, but we want to keep our designation as a tow truck association. With the amendments and the agreement that we have or seem to have with the two sponsors, I think the bill will work out well. And with that, we would fully support it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further opponents? Informational?
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members, John Swartz, and it's J-O-N, S as in Sam, W-A-R-T-Z. I'm from Helena, Montana. I'm the administrator of the maintenance division for the Montana Department of Transportation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have for the department. Thanks.
Any other informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? No questions from the committee. All right. Would you care to close on your bill? You get off pretty easy. Too late.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, certainly happy to answer any questions. A couple of points in my closing here to address concerns on blue lights. As I stated before, we'll put an amendment on the line 23 on the blue lights. But if you look on line 25 on page 6, it says only police vehicles as defined in 618.102 may display blue lights, lenses, or globes. So that should take away that concern. And it does not discount or omit tow truck drivers. That was the impetus for the initial bill last time. So this whole thing surrounds tow truck drivers, whether it's emergency or non-emergency. They are indeed protected and part of the team, regardless of how they work inoperably on a scene. That's not what this bill describes. But nonetheless, I would suggest one more little thought here, and maybe Representative Durham can follow up on this. We don't have all the details perfect, but nonetheless, maybe there's an option here in line 28 as we talk about rural electric cooperatives and rural telephone cooperatives to include private utilities, which we have one major one in the state. So if that is compatible with the committee, Mr. Chair, certainly would be a friendly clarity to the bill itself. So with those two little blips, I'm sure Representative Durham and your folks can merge those bills accordingly. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate your cooperation.
Thank you. And that closes the hearing on House Bill 470. We have a few bills that we haven't done executive action on. We have House Bill 472, appropriation for safe sidewalks, and House Bill 486, revised county road access laws. Do we need a little time to come back on Wednesday on those? Do we have any questions or anything that needs to be done, do you feel?
Mr. Chair, or Friday.
Pardon me?
Or Friday. Some of us have Ash Wednesday plans.
You'll have to probably leave a proxy because we do have bills scheduled as well. So let's committee. Yes, Representative Durham, or Fern.
The question I think you're asking is, will we be ready to take action on this on Wednesday? Is that the question?
Or today.
Or today. I hear one Wednesday.
I'm seeing nods on Wednesday.
Today.
Because I do think there are a couple questions that people might need to dig into a little bit. We don't have to rush. If we get them out Wednesday, we're fine.
Wednesday's a great day to take action.
Oh, 486, I'm told, has an amendment, so that's not here yet anyway. So I think we'll just adjourn our meeting and figure we'll finish things on Wednesday. And thank you, committee. You did a good job today.